Welcome to the Sister Girls Book Club podcast. I'm your host, Cherie, and it's a new year. That means new interviews and more dope bookish conversations. I'm so excited about our first interview. Malcolm MJ Harris debuted his first book, Get the Bleep Out of Your Own Way, A Guide to Letting Go of the Shit That's Holding You Back. Sis, if you want this year to be different than every other year, or if you simply want to make some change in your life, this is the book that will give you the jumpstart you need. Be sure to follow us on social media, Sister Girls Book Club, on all of our handles, and please rate this episode and give us your feedback. Enjoy the interview.
Okay, Sister Girls, we've got him here. I am so excited to have Malcolm MJ Harris in the building. First of all, MJ, it was hard getting you here, but I was like, we gonna make it. We gonna get you on this show no matter what. So how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. I got a little bit of a cold from all this hopping around. In the past 2 weeks, I have been in, where have I been? I've been in South Africa, France, New York, DC, Dallas,
oh,
and now in Bangkok.
You've been on world tour.
I have.
So for those of those, I don't know how people might not know, but Malcolm MJ Harris is an entrepreneur, a social influencer, a self-help coach, a reality chin checker, and now you're a published author. I'm so excited for you. Congratulations. Get the bleep out of your own way, a guide to letting go of the shit that's holding you back. How does it feel to be a published author?
You know, it feels absolutely amazing. You know, my first attempt to come into the self-help world mm-hmm. was as an author. Mm-hmm. I was 17 and my mother found my journal mm-hmm. because she wasn't being intrusive. I had thrown it away. I don't read my journals. I just do them every day and I throw them out at the end of once the journal's done. She said, this is so inspirational. What is this? I said, it's my journal. And she says, you should try to publish a book. Not those one of those things that just a mom says. Mm-hmm. But I believed her for a minute. And I went, and when I got turned 18, I signed with the literary agency with the goal of getting a publisher. Mm-hmm. Nobody picked me up. No one picked me up. Mm-hmm. And so here we are all these years later, over 20 years later, and to have a book coming out, it's just a reminder to everyone that dreams come true and a blessing delayed is not a blessing denied.
Yes, I love that. And so even thinking about the book, when you wanted to write the book back then, how did you go from shooting uplifting content in your kitchen? Because I feel like I was with you back in the day. To like an entire book, a career, living the life of your dreams. How do you, like, we can see it, but we only get to see so much of it. Because it's like, yeah, we start seeing the different backgrounds. You like, I'm here, I'm there. And we're like, oh my God, we're actually watching like the blessings unfold. And you're also giving back to your audience and in a way that's not like bashing us, but it's also like giving us that chin check. Like, how do you go from there? And how has that journey been for you?
You know, the journey's been amazing, I will tell you, because the fact is that within my life, I have one clear line that runs through everything. It doesn't matter if it's something I'm doing on camera that's comedic, or if I'm doing a speaking event, or if I'm coaching someone one-on-one, or if I'm writing a book. The through line that goes through everything is that I'm here to inspire and entertain people. And I use the entertainment as a way to help people digest the lessons, because sometimes the lessons are really hard. And so for me to be able to do this means so much. And for this to be able to create a platform for me to be able to take care of my family, take care of myself, create jobs. You know, my company is 100% women for my staff. I have all women on my team. I think that pretty much everyone in my company, except for one lawyer, is women. And he works for the top lawyer, who's actually my main counsel. And so I have been surrounded by women, and I live my life to be able to help women. I want to help everyone, but 92% of my viewers are women, and it is just such an amazing thing to be able to live my life in such a big, bold way and inspire women to do the same thing.
Yes, and one thing I really enjoyed about your book is that I could hear you in my voice, in my head. Sorry, not in my voice. In my
really?
I could hear your voice in my head as I was reading. I was not reading as like my own like reading. I was like, he's in my head at this point. I can hear your voice. I can hear the cadence. And the book reads like you break it down from the very beginning and then you build it back up, because it's like trying to get it from accountability to knowing who we are to self-worth. How did you come up with the flow and the order of the book?
Well, you know, what I thought about was, you know, because before I got into, you know, social media and all this, you know, I was a management consultant. I'm a business person. Mm-hmm. And for me, I said the most logical thing to put into a book are going to be the top lessons that have resonated with people, but elaborate on them. Because when you're watching one of my lessons in a 3-minute video on Instagram or TikTok or wherever you may be watching it, it doesn't give you the meat sometimes of how to actually walk that out. How do you do that thing? I inspire you to see that you need to make that change, but how do you do it? So I took those lessons and I said, if these short videos that have gotten in some cases 5, 6, 7, 8 million views on them, if these could be really flushed out into full lessons, how do we do that? And we added some additional lessons that have never gone on social media. And once we did that, we had so many of them that the book would have been like the Bible. And so we narrowed it down based on which ones had the biggest impact in my own life. Because my logic is this: if it's impacted me, then it's bound to impact other people. Because I am just like you all. I'm a person who's come from a childhood where I had some challenges here and there. I've, you know, gone through every trial and every triumph that you can imagine. And so for me, I just feel like if something touches me, I know it can touch my audience.
Yes. And I love that, because when I read it, I was like, this goes so well together. It's like from every point of view, every topic, it was just a flow. So you open the book with a bang. For it was definitely for the new year, new me girlies. And I feel like I was that girly because I read the book. I got the book early and I was reading it as close to the new year as possible. And I was like, yeah, get me right. And then I was hit with a reality check, because I'm like, this is not the fluff self-help book. This is not going to be one of those things going to be like, oh, you're going to feel so great about yourself if you just wake up in the morning and you just write on your wall that I'm amazing. I mean, you do that. But you start with a real chin check of like, we have to take accountability. And one of the things I love was the teachings that your mother gave you. And it was, we've heard even in the Bible that there's nothing new under the sun. So my question is, how did you figure out how to take accountability and stop trying to recreate the wheel and be effective so that you could live the life of your dreams?
Because I realized that nothing was going to change in my life until I took accountability. I've done the other stuff. I've done the blaming the man, blaming the parent, blaming the life, blaming everything in circumstances as well. And nothing changed. You know, in fact, my circumstances got worse. And so for me, I'm like, listen, I'm here to live a big, bold, beautiful life. I am here to live the life of my dreams. I'm here to be the full manifestation of what I believe is God's power and full potential within me. And I can't do that until I take ownership of what am I doing that's causing these issues. People say, you know, my mama did this, my brother did that, my spouse did this, my whoever did that. And you're right, those people did do all those things. I don't take that away from you. But the reality is that that's the past. You are now in control. And for most of us as adults, we have full agency to choose what we focus on, our habits, what we choose to do, and how we choose to heal. Our healing is our responsibility, even if our hurt was caused by someone else.
Woo! That's a bar. Our healing is our responsibility, even if our hurt was caused by somebody else. I remember that one. that was a good one. And I'm like, woo! A lot of times we get into like, it was your fault, especially when we're adults and we're thinking about it. We really like start pointing the fingers, but it's like, girl, you about 40. Like, I'm sorry, but you got to start doing the work.
we Bigfoot grown folks out here sitting here still blaming something from 20 years ago. And here's the thing, and I want to make sure I'm clear about this. You have a right to still be hurt by the apology you didn't get. You have a right to be upset about what happened to you. I'm not one of these self-help gurus to tell you just forget about it all and let it go and live in a beautiful life in your future. That is bull. Trauma lives with us. And for anyone who's ever experienced trauma in any way, shape, or form, what you know to be true is that healing from trauma is not living your life with the absence of trauma. It's living your life in such a way where the trauma does not guide your decisions anymore, where the trauma can be there. The triggers can be there, but they are not causing you to make decisions based on it. And so for me, what I tell people is when you take ownership, it's not about ignoring or denying what happened to you. It's not about taking away responsibility from anyone who victimized you or the circumstances that were not in your favor or that were not fair. It's about acknowledging that you can't go in the past to change any of that. The only way you can make your life into what you want is by you choosing to make the choices today that can create the kind of life that you want to live. And that's why I say get out of your own way, because it's the only way that you can let go of the stuff that's holding you back.
Woo, you are preaching today. So one of the major takeaways I had that you said in the book was give people a chance to see you as a human being by letting them humanize you. That was another gem you dropped. And we say it especially for like our parents or like people that are older, but rarely do we apply it to us because it requires us to be vulnerable, which is also basically us being authentic. And we love saying like, just be authentic, especially the way we show up online, be yourself and everything will be great. But why do you think it's so hard for us to be authentic? Especially in a world that's social media heavy, where we don't want to impact our brands negatively. How do we become ourselves when the world is based on us being nice or being perceived as nice? It's not like you're authentic. Every day I'm not authentically happy. You know what I mean? How do we do that in a way that we can share? Like, you know, if we had a bad day and we come on the internet and we want to share that, and it's just like, girl, why is somebody crying on the internet? Why is somebody doing this on the internet? And so we make fun of those people. So people don't do that. You know, they don't come on there just trying to be themselves. They want to have that it factor. And the it factor most of the time is not authentic. It's not authentic. So how do we show up? And like, that's so hard.
Yeah. You know what I think is, I think we have to give ourselves grace, because most folks, if you have to ask, how do I be authentic? Like, how should I show up as authentically as possible? More than likely, you may not be aware of who you are fully authentically, you know, because when that question comes up, I mean, people who know who they are inside and out don't usually have to ask that question. If anything, it's hard for them not to show up authentically. And this is not a criticism of people who have that question. What it is I'm giving you a starting point on how to work towards being authentic. Mm-hmm. The way that you determine who you authentically are is this, and it's so simple. What do you want to do, and who are you when you are saying yes to the things you want to say yes to and no to the things you want to say no to? Your authentic self ultimately comes down to living within your heart's desire, whatever that may be, okay? It's not about saying, well, let's do this because they want to do this, let's do that because they want to do this, or saying yes to things you want to say yes, you want to say no to. It's about living in your true heart's desire, not being selfish, neglecting the needs of people who you have the responsibility of taking care of, such as your minor children. Mm-hmm. But it's about saying, who am I when I am giving myself what I want? If I could design a perfect day, what would that look like? If I could design the perfect outfit, how would I be dressing? If I could talk how I want to talk, how would I talk? I think we have to lock into who are we authentically in this chapter of our life. Because some people say, I know I am authentically. Was that who you are authentically today? Or is that who you are authentically 5 years ago? Life changes us, you know? And so I think we have to lock into who are we now? Because once we lock into that, then the path to authenticity is just choosing to present that to the world in appropriate settings. Now, let me go a little bit deeper, because I do have an opinion on social media. I had a conversation actually not that long ago on another podcast about this, where the person who was interviewing me said, you know, said the same thing. He says, you know, with social media, so much of it isn't real. And I said, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think that the idea that we should show our full selves at all times, I think that that's a dangerous idea, especially in the world of social media, where you don't have control over where that's going to go out to. I think that what we have to know is that our authentic self is the most sacred thing that we have. And so once we identify who we are authentically, then what we have to identify is who deserves to be in the presence of our authentic self, right? Because you have some relatives in your life who don't deserve to be in the presence of your authentic self, because when you share your real opinions with them, they criticize you, they low-key bully you for those opinions, they look down on you, and it hurts you. And so from that perspective, what I say is this: whatever you show on social media, whatever that may be, hold something for yourself. Mm-hmm. Be as real as you can be, but hold something for yourself, because at the end of the day, the world will not be there to pick you up and put you back together after they tear you down. So make sure that you keep the things that are most valuable to you only in the presence of the people who deserve to see those.
I like that. And so I'm gonna hit on back to trauma a little bit. You spent a great deal in the book talking about trauma and how we can how we react and deal with our own issues. How did you learn how to identify your trauma and not just self-diagnose, but and do the work to become a better person? Because a lot of times we're smart enough to self-diagnose, myself included, but then it's like, yeah, girl, but what else? Like, how did you kind of take the next step and be like, okay, now fix it?
Well, therapy. Therapy is what it came down to. Because I knew my trauma, you know, going through abuse and then re-traumatizing myself by choosing to be in relationships that often mimic the patterns of dysfunction and abuse that I experienced in earlier stages of my life, which a lot of us do. You don't know you're doing it. You're like, why am I keeping up in these same types of relationships? Because you're mimicking patterns of dysfunction and trauma, you know? And so for me, what I realized was that I can't deal with this on my own. I don't know how to get out of this on my own. As much as I try, I still end up in the same type of situations over and over again. And all the prayer and meditation in the world ain't really doing it. And so what I chose to do is I chose to do therapy. Therapy was a really helpful tool for me to be able to, first of all, get to the root of my trauma, get to the root of my stuff, as I like to call it. And then also be able to identify what are some steps to take in order to address those things in my life. And I'm going to tell you, it's been a process, and you have to give yourself grace, because the stuff that we've been through, in a lot of cases, we went through it for years. It's become enmeshed in us for years, and in some cases, decades. So expecting that you're going to be able to get over it just by reading one book or by watching a couple videos or going to a couple therapy sessions, it's not realistic. The books, you know, such as mine, therapists out there, life coaches, we are there to help inspire you to work through your stuff. We are here to give you tools and a path on how to work through it, but ultimately it will take time for these changes to actualize within your life.
Yeah, that's good, because a lot of times people read a book or two or 15 and they're just like, I'm wondering why it's not working, because it's like, talk to somebody who's a professional. It is a jump start to give you that boost, or at least like a whisper or a tap on your shoulder. They say, yes, something is wrong, or something might, you know, might want to check in on that. So one of the things that I loved, and I was also like, oh my God, I'm probably guilty of this, is people pleasing. And you said people.
My tattoo. It's look twisted, but it's not. It's just because I got to twist my wrist. It says, put yourself first.
Yes, I love that.
I'm the person who keeps a short haircut. I don't have no piercings. I don't got no nothing. I'm probably the most conservative person on earth when it comes to my appearance. I like tattoos on men, though. But for me, I said, you know, I'm going to get one. And I put this right here because even as someone who makes his living screaming into a camera, telling y'all to put yourself first, telling y'all to not be a people pleaser, it's still something I struggle with. It's still something where, you know, just yesterday, I was on a business call. My nephew's son, Marco, was sitting right beside me. And he's often beside me when I'm on business calls and things of that nature. And he's sitting there, and he's there for two reasons. To listen and learn, but he's also there to help me check in with myself to make sure that I wasn't being a people pleaser, right? And so I got off the phone and he's like, I said, what? He says, I may not know everything about business like you do, but they trying to get over on you. Do what's best for you. And so even at this stage in my life, it's something I have to be conscious of, which is not to be a people pleaser, because being a people pleaser is something that a lot of us struggle with, especially us who are the caregivers of the world. You know, it really is hard for us.
So you tie people pleasing in with self-worth, and I had never thought about it that way at all. How did you break free from people pleasing? Well, you just said you kind of always have to do a chin check in the industry that's based on likability, though. This whole in the industry that's based on likability, how do you chin check people pleasing? We're like, even down to, even if you're not an influencer or a coach, it's still just going on internet. It's all about like and resharing. I love you. I like that. How do you like navigate?
You know, one of the things I'm very transparent about is that my name is Malcolm Harris. When I go on camera, the name of my book is MJ Harris. That's my first two initials. Same person. So I think of it almost like Beyonce and Sasha Fierce. When I first came into this industry, because rather than social media or TV screen, at the end of the day, you all are watching us on LED screens. This is just a little miniature TV, right? It's the entertainment industry. And so when I came into this a couple years in, my mother and my boyfriend at the time, who had helped me to come into this whole space, he was in the music industry and was very familiar with what was happening in social media at the time. What they helped me to understand was, you are not Malcolm Harris sitting on that camera. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They said, you're not Malcolm Harris. These people do not see you at home watering your hydrangeas. They don't see you at home driving down the street in silence. I don't like to keep music on in the car. I normally drive in silence. You know, they don't understand that you are an extreme introvert in that, you know, small talk makes you cringe, right? They don't know this about you. What they know is what they get from you in the parts that you show. And so from that perspective, you, when you're on camera and whatever goes out there about you, it's coming from MJ Harris. MJ Harris is a part of you. It's the manifestation of your gift that God has given you to be able to help people. But MJ Harris, when that camera cuts off, when that stage light cuts off, MJ Harris is no longer working. You turn back into Malcolm. So to answer your question, what I've had to do, and this can work in your lives too, is if you, even if you're not on camera, you know, is I had to accept that when people say things about me, positive or negative, especially within the space of my work, they are not talking about me. They're not sitting in my kitchen talking about me as someone that they genuinely know. They're talking about someone that they saw on a camera, something that they liked that they didn't like. It's not about me. So what I've had to learn to do is I take the compliments very graciously and I appreciate them, but I don't take ownership of the compliments. Mm-hmm. Someone telling me, you know, you're the most amazing person on earth. Thank you so much. And I don't take ownership of the compliments, because if you take ownership of the compliments, you also have to take ownership of the critiques. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to take ownership of either. What I want to do is to be able to be centered, to be able to continuously deliver what I've been delivering for over 15 years, which is being led by my creator, to be able to share with people the messages that I think will empower them, not guided by chasing compliments or likes and shares, mm-hmm. anything like that, but being guided by, is the message that I'm receiving coming through me? And within our own lives, I think that that's what we have to do. You have to understand that when most people say negative things about you, even if it's your spouse or your parent or whoever it may be, they're not talking about you. They're talking about a persona that they've painted of you based on the interaction they've had with you, but also filtered through their own experiences, their own trauma. So that doesn't mean that you're not accountable for how you impact them, but often, as my grandma would say, what people think about you is not your business. And so for me, I have to be very conscious of that given the nature of work that I do. If I wasn't conscious of that, I'd be eaten alive.
Ooh, I think that's definitely going to help a lot of people, especially how we show up on social media, because yeah. I think you let it eats at us so bad. And it's like, all you have to do is put the phone down and all of it goes away. All you have to do is get out the app, get out that. It's so hard to not let that. You'll go on the app and people be fighting for their life in the comments. And I'm like, this is going to be with them for the day. And somebody just drop a comment and they just going about their day, not knowing if they said your hair looked ugly, if they called you a name. That stick with you the whole day, the whole month. It ruined your whole week. And they just dropped a negative comment and went to go get something to eat. And here you are 24 hours later saying they all hate me. They all, you know, so I love
you. And now it's guiding everything you do from then on out. You know, but I'll tell you this. Before Marco got on camera, I remember we had a video. It was probably one of our first videos. And we were just about to hit post on it. Right before I hit post, I said, are you sure you okay with me clicking post on this? Because of our family series, I mean, our video views have been viewed something like 250 million times or something like that, largely because of Facebook, which I'm very grateful for the platform. And I said, you sure? Because we didn't know what was going to come, but I knew it was going to be something. Mm-hmm. He says, yeah, I'm fine. I said, you can't undo this. And you have to understand it's going to be heavy on you. And so he said, yes, I'm sure. So we put it out. And then as time went along, it definitely did give him a sense of anxiety. And one of the things that I told him, that I tell anyone within this social media space, is this. Social media is necessary if you want to market anything in this society, if you want to be a presence in this society, even when it comes to looking for jobs, you need to have a presence that people can look up. If they can't find you, then they treat you as if somehow or another your credibility doesn't exist. But social media is literally just within this phone or that TV that you may be watching the app through. Mm-hmm. If you're having a hard moment with how you're being received, you can always turn it off for that moment. You don't have to sit in it. You don't have to argue. You don't have to respond. The person on the other end of it who says something critical of you, more than likely is someone who's very hurt, very hurt. And that's why they would seek out that opportunity to hurt you, because I've never seen a happy person use social media to tear down other people. And so I think that lesson goes throughout our whole life when it comes to people pleasing, which is this, that anyone who goes out of their way to hurt you, or anyone that you feel like you have to overfunction for in order to make them happy, that's probably not someone who deserves your energy. That's someone who probably isn't very happy. But if you can focus on what makes you happy and understand that what people think about you really doesn't have much of an impact on your day-to-day life, unless it's someone signing a check for you, it really doesn't have much impact on your day-to-day life, then it centers you so that, not that the negativity doesn't hurt you, but it's easier for you to release it when it comes up.
Yes, I love that. I'm going to take that with me, okay? You also talked about the big B, and the B stands for boundaries. And yes, you said that into self-worth as well. You said boundaries are there to protect the sacred space of how you want to live. Again, another aha moment. And to be honest, I used to believe boundaries was like a power play. And now I know better because I have some of my own. But one thing,
really?
One thing I've noticed is that when people change and they start to create boundaries and do the work, they encounter people who knew the old them and don't take them seriously. So how can we deal with them in a way that doesn't make us revert back to our old selves?
Have the boundaries limit how much time you want to spend around them. See, here's how I deal with it. I didn't set my boundaries. Let me be real clear about this. I did not set my boundaries with the condition that they will only be implemented around people who agreed to accept them and agreed to jump on with me. I don't care if you jump on with me. You see what I'm saying? This is my boundary. This is how it is. I don't need your permission. I don't even got to tell you about it unless you cross it. You see what I'm saying? Although I do think that for people who are close to you, you have to give them your guidebook and proactively let them know what your boundaries are. That way you're setting them in the relationship up for success. But ultimately, I don't care who the person is. You don't need their permission to have a boundary. So for those people who knew you from before, girl, you real cute now, but I remember when.
Right?
Let me stop you right there, girl. Okay, I love you. I love you with the love of the Lord. But here's the thing. That's not a conversation I'm willing to have. And if you'd like me to come around, for that matter, because you're in my house right now, if you'd like to be able to stay in my house in this moment and be invited back, that type of conversation can't happen anymore. Are we in agreement? Or should I grab your coat?
Ooh, not to grab your coat.
You have to be that clear about it. My thing is this, if you were to say to me, MJ, you know what? I'm going to cut all my hair off, and please don't cut all your hair off because it's beautiful, but I'm using it as an example. If you were to say to me, I'm going to cut all my hair off and I'm going to go move to a distant island someplace and dress like, you know how Erykah Badu used to dress back when she was first coming out and dressing in that nice, beautiful attire, and you're going to become a spiritualist, right? And everything about you going to be different. In fact, you're going to change your name. You're going to change your name too, right? You have a right to do that. You have a right to be the full expression of whoever you want to be in this world and set boundaries around you that protect that sacred being. That's what boundaries are there for. They are there to protect the sacred being of who you choose to be within this moment in time. And so if someone's not willing to respect those boundaries, what you have to understand is that this is someone who's also letting you know that I may not be ready to maintain or have access to you in the same way that I have before.
Yes, I love that. And it's good, especially it's always hard when it's relatives or people that knew you from back in the day or people who's hanging on. It's like, those are the hardest ones. But I'm learning.
You know, the thing with relatives is this, what you got to remember is that you all were born into the same bloodline, but you have no obligation to them. You have no obligation to them. You know, and I think this is a very culturally specific thing, because I do think I've seen, you know, when I'm scrolling online and everything like that, and I talk and I see all these posts about people who, some people even talk about that they have iced out their parents. Well, not, they don't say iced out. What is it? When they go, basically stop, they disconnect. They stop talking to a parent. When I first heard, like, you stop talking to your parent? Oh my God. You know, it's just not a part of my culture. And so I've seen this with folks from other cultures who've done this. And what I can say is this, is that I think we need to lock in on that as a people. And as a people, I'm talking about African-Americans. We need to lock in on the fact that family is really people who treat you like family. And so if there's someone who traumatizes you continuously and repeatedly, and no matter how much you try, no matter how much reasonable boundaries you put in place, no matter how much attempt you're making in order to have a healthy situation with them, and they don't buy into it, I don't care what your bloodline is. I don't care if you came out of their birth canal. You don't need to deal with that person. Yes, it will hurt. Yes, you will grieve the separation. But here's the thing that we have to understand. The grief from the separation, right? And sometimes separation doesn't mean you cut them off. It just means you deal with them every now and then. I almost see them major holidays, right? The grief from the separation is far less than the pain from being re-traumatized. We are so scared of having the pain of separating from someone who we are family with, but what you don't understand is you're already in pain. And the pain that you're in right now by having this person continue to traumatize you, continue to trample on your boundaries, that pain is actually greater than what you would experience if you just pulled away a little bit. In fact, you may even find some pleasure and some relief in that.
Mm-hmm. You done set a lot of people free right there with that. Because I feel like a lot of times we feel so bound by like change. Like, that's my uncle, that's my cousin, that's my mama, that's my daddy. Like, they brought me into this world and blah, 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 blah. But you're right. It's like we're just re-traumatizing ourselves if we're around people who don't treat us the way we want to be treated or who make us feel bad. So one of the game changers that you introduced was the guidebook. And yes. Like one of the most toxic bombs, in my opinion, has ever been created was the idea that people should know how to treat you. And I'm guilty of that too, because I will literally be like, all right, I'm not going to say nothing. This is getting on my nerve, but watch, let him do it again. It's a wrap. I'm not going to be around at all. Like, it's going to be a cutoff. You're not silent treatment. And all, you even talked about the silent treatment. I was like, oh my God.
Silent treatment is an act of abuse.
You said that. I was like, oh my God. You know how many times I just was like, you know what? I'm just not going. I'll hit them up in like 5 days. Why do you think it's important for people to have a guidebook? And why is it important for them to stop doing what I just said I did, what I'm guilty of, thinking that people know?
When I say give people your guidebook, what I'm talking about is teaching people how to treat you. People don't know what you need and they don't always know what you want. I don't care if this is your spouse who you go to bed with every night. I don't care if this is your child who you're around every day. They don't know all the intricacies of what you're feeling and what you need. And they don't always even know when you're offended. Just because you may have a facial expression that shows you're offended, they don't know specifically what that is. And I can say for me, I've made this mistake over and over and over again within my life of not giving people my guidebooks and then holding them accountable when they don't meet my expectations. Cutting off relationships prematurely with people, not because they were bad people, but because they stepped on my toes. And at the time that made me think they were a bad person. When the truth of the matter was, I was the culprit because A, I did not proactively communicate to them what my needs were because I was too stuck in being a people pleaser and wanting you around. So in order to get you around and keep you around and attract you to stay around me, I would act like things didn't bother me. And then over time, once you know the newness and the novelty of the relationship would wear off, then I start to indirectly express when things bothered me. But that was through silence, through the silent treatment and things of that nature. And it was very, very damaging to my relationships. I can tell you, once I became a parent, that's probably what shifted it for me in terms of, you don't have to be a parent for this to shift you, but this is when it was thrown in my face in a way that made me say, oh my God, this is really damaging. I am traumatizing people when I do the silent treatment. And it was Marco. He had said to me, I think I was upset with him about something. And baby, when I tell you, I am masterful at the silent treatment, okay, baby? I will make you forget you exist. You will forget you have a pulse in my presence when I decide I'm going to ice you out. You know what I mean?
And I'm a Capricorn, so I'm like, we are good at saying, we already have a pre-plan. I might never have to talk to this person again, so let me already just be
Let me
cool.
build this out. Yeah, I can do it. And he said to me something. It was after one of those silent treatments. Now, in our house, silent treatments probably went for probably about a day and a half. He can't handle it, I can't handle it, but so long, but that's still a lot. And so he said to me, he said, you know, he says, when you do that, it really, really hurts me and it triggers me to fear abandonment. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I am triggering a fear of abandonment in him. And it's not the abandonment of, oh, I'm just going to walk out the door and you're not going to see me again. It's the abandonment of emotional abandonment, which to me is worse than physical abandonment. And so I looked it up and I read the definition of stonewalling. And if you do the silent treatment, just read this definition, y'all. Stonewalling. Stonewalling is a form of abuse. Even I'm not calling you abusive, but what I am saying is, if you use the silent treatment as a way to communicate anger, pain, or make a point, you might be causing damage to the other person that may be greater than what you think.
And that's so true, because like And kids do it at such an early age. They'd be like, don't talk to me. Like, my niece is 7. And she loves giving me the silent treatment. She'd be like, oh, you call her name. I'm like, and I tell her, I hurt my feelings. She's like, oh, really? You know, and it's a way for them to communicate their discomfort, to let you know that something is wrong, but also let them know you. It's like, it's so funny how adults will be able to like get vulnerable with children, but we can't do it with each other. Cause I'll be like, use your words. You don't have to like just stop talking to a person or just use your words. Say what made you mad or say what hurt your feelings. But we can't do as adults. It's like we cannot, for some reason, we can't do it. I don't know, but.
Well, you know what I recommend though? Mm-hmm. I recommend that you start small. Mm-hmm. Find someone in your life that you can be comfortable with increasingly more over time. And that's usually someone who's already vulnerable with you, right? Mm-hmm. Find someone that you can be vulnerable with, you know? And focus on maybe being vulnerable with them. I have a friend, I'm not gonna name their name because this person holds such a sacred space in my life. And with me and her, literally, she just sent me a voice note right before I got on camera today. And it was 14 minutes and 55 seconds because we talk on WhatsApp. And she can be as vulnerable as she wants with me. She can tell me anything. And I talk to her and I tell her everything, right? We just talk. And for her, it's so healing to have someone who I can be so vulnerable with. Even if I couldn't tell the person who I was really mad at that I was mad at them, because maybe there's not that space in that relationship. I can't really do that at that moment in time. Maybe it's not appropriate. Maybe I don't know how to express it. I can go to her and say, oh my God, he pissed me off. And he really hurt my feelings. I wanted to cry, blah, blah, blah. I can say that. And through being so vulnerable with that person in my life, it actually has created more capacity for me to be vulnerable with other people as well. Because I'm someone who struggles with vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage people, find at least one person that you can start with being open with. And then over time, you will find that capacity will grow to be able to do it with other people as well.
I like that. And one thing that you mentioned, and we're almost done, was the balance of being in our masculine and our feminine energy. I feel like for the first time in history, we are beating this topic to death, but nobody has broken it down the way you did it. Why do you think that it's good to operate in both? And what should we do when we realize we are imbalanced? And also the stereotypes, how do we break them so that we can be our authentic selves? Because right now I feel like masculine energy, feminine energy, and what's a woman, what's a man, how do we, it's so much. But when you broke it down in your book, I was just like, oh, wow, I love that. I was like, oh, wow. It was disconnect right quick. It was, I was like, oh, wow. I love that. So how do we do that to create that balance? Because you broke it down, but I'm like, how do we do that in real life?
So, you know, the reality is that we have to accept that we all embody masculine and feminine energy. You could be the most big, burly, you know, quote unquote, masculine presenting man, you got feminine energy. You got a lot of it in you, okay? It may not show in the way that you think of, because people think that feminine is feminine and masculine is masculine. Mm-hmm. It's not. Or you could be the most feminine appearing woman from a very westernized definition of the word, but also have a strong amount of masculine energy within you. I think what we have to accept is that we all have both energy types and within us and through conditioning, so through nature as well as through nurture, we may lean towards one side of our energy a bit more, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Balance doesn't mean 50-50. Balance means that allowing both of them to be there so they can show up when they need to show up. And I think that's very helpful. I can tell you this, my father, you have to understand my father. My father is a man originally from New York, but who spent most of his life in Texas. So he's very direct like a New Yorker, but very Southern and sweet. My father is just the nicest man on earth, but a man's man. And I remember when I was probably about 13 or 14, around the time where it was very clear that I was gay, he said to me, you know, don't worry about changing nothing about you, you know. And I said, well, Dad, I can't not be gay. I'm gay. And, you know, and he says, no, I ain't talking about that. I know you can't change that. He said, but don't be trying to act all masculine like these other men be doing out here. You ain't got to do all that. And I said, why you say that? Because that was so enlightening to me. You know, in the South, it was always butch up, you know, boy, He said, because, you know, you got a balance. You got a balance. You got that feminine stuff going on in you. And that's real good. People lock in that. They like that. They trust that more, right? But you can always get by with feminine energy. You can excel with that. But you got that masculine. You need that masculine. Because if you're only feminine, you ain't going to never be able to get to the top. You got to be both. And mm-hmm. so he helped me to understand that the combination of my energies was going to work to my benefit, that one wasn't better than the other, but that they both had their own strengths. And because I've operated in that very comfortably within my life as a gay man, I learned over time, I was like, women need to know this information too. So do men, but especially women. Like, it's okay to operate in both energies. It maybe they're not going to come out equally in every space, but in certain spaces, you better bring out some masculine energy. If you're sitting in a job, a boardroom, in a setting, you know, where everyone else in there is showing up with strong masculine energy, this is not the time to soften. This is the time to show up with an energy that's going to command the respect that you need so you can get the outcomes that you want. When you're dealing with your masculine energy partner, hitting him or her with a bunch of masculine energy is not going to help, because masculine energy becomes more confrontational when confronted by masculine energy. So that's a time to soften. So I teach people about learning to accept and balance both of their energies, because they both have a utility in helping you to live a really amazing life. It's just about choosing when to pull them out.
Yeah, I love that, because I was just like, this is going to help especially a lot of women, because I think we're in a space right now, especially on TikTok and Instagram, is like the whole what's feminine and what's not and when can you step mm-hmm. into masculine and why. And I'm just like, it's a balance. With everything, there's a balance. And this is the biggest topic, I think, that we're still going to run until to the end of times. Yeah. But ghosting. You said, I feel like when you said, I saw when the video blew up when you first talked about ghosting, I was like, I don't know, MJ, this is getting a little tough. You said it wasn't a bad thing. And I said, say what now? Because I don't think nobody likes to feel ghosted when they are doing, when they are the ghostee. When you're the one doing the ghosting, it's kind of like, well, you know. So why is ghosting not a bad thing? But how do we cope when we're the ones being ghosted?
Yeah, so I'll tell you this. With ghosting, I'm not saying that it's a good thing. Let me be clear. Just because I said it's not inherently a bad thing, I'm not saying it's a good thing. What I'm saying is that ghosting is a normal function of relationships, for some relationships, right? And what I mean by that is that as you are out here building relationships, as you're looking to meet people, dating really, because that's what we're talking about within the context of dating, you are going to come across some people who may not value you in the same way that you value them. And they may choose to ghost you as a way to communicate that. That's why I say it's normal. And I'm not saying that it's normal for everyone to do it, but I am saying it's something that you may experience from time to time. It doesn't matter who you are. You can be the most beautiful, rich celebrity. You will get ghosted at some point in time. It is what it is, right? And what I tell people is that understanding that, accepting that as a reality of the dating world helps you to also equip yourself so that you can hopefully avoid being ghosted. And I'll give you an example. Often when people tell me, hey, you know, this person ghosted me and I don't know what to do and blah, blah, blah. How do I get over it? How do I get their attention? I ask them, I say, well, could you walk me through what were the couple weeks like before they ghosted you? You know, what was that like? Did they slow down on calls, whatever? Well, yeah, you know, he said he was kind of busy and he slowed down on calling me and blah, 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 or, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. So there were clear changes in communication patterns. Yeah. And what did you do? Well, I just kept reaching out. I was consistent. Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically, you observed, your discernment showed you that the tide was changing and you didn't check in with them about it. But most importantly, you didn't change your energy. Mm-hmm. And what you didn't recognize is that for some people, they may lack the communication skills to tell you, hey, I changed my mind. And I think we have to be empathetic, right? Because picture this, right? Picture that man or that woman who ghosted you. Think about what their childhood may have been like. Maybe they grew up in a house with an alcoholic parent or a narcissistic parent, where the idea of disappointing them got them severe consequences. Maybe they come from a background where they don't know how to confront things at all. Just because they may be big and burly and looking all masculine or very feminine, sweet and soft and gorgeous, doesn't mean that they don't have trauma of their own. And so in recognizing that some people just don't have the tools to tell you when they don't want you, what you have to do is understand that if you're operating within the dating and relationship space, only responding to what people verbalize to you, then you're missing out on about 70% of the actual communication. The actual communication is in patterns. The actual communication is in all those unspoken nonverbal cues. And if you ignore those things, then you will set yourself up to be ghosted more often than not. Mm.
Well, that's a word, and that's going to clear it up for a lot of people. Let's get to the end of this. And I just want to know, like, what has been your favorite part about writing this book and, like, the responses? Because now the book has been out for a little while. How did you want people to receive the book? And is it doing the work that you wanted it to do?
You know, my favorite part about writing the book was knowing that my words would be able to be taken to people in a format that they can really lock in on. You know, a video is wonderful, but after you watch that video and get that moment, you click like and click share, you're on to the next video. And by about five swipes down, you may have forgotten about the video. Maybe you'll think about it later, but you're on to whatever you're watching next. You're watching them make potato salad. You know, I watch a lot of soul food cooking videos. I like watching them. And so with a book, something about a book, even if it's an audio format, it's with you. You can reference it over and over again. You can mark that part that you like. And so to me, I just love the fact that these powerful lessons are going to be able to stay with people as a reference. But when I was writing the book, I told them, I said, I don't want this to be one of these books where you have to read it from the start to the finish. I want to be one of these books where at any point in time, like, oh my God, I'm going through X, just go to the table of contents, find that chapter, and go straight to that. I want it to be a reference book. If you want to read it through, great, but you can always come back to it and just go to the chapters that you need most. And so when people write in and tell me how it's helping them, how it's changed them, one woman told me she's already listened to an audiobook like 3 times. I'm like, this is incredible because they're getting something out of it. And I just love doing that. I love knowing that I'm helping to change people's lives.
I love that. And for the people, I always ask, because I feel like you would be able to give a good word. People are going through hard times. They're dealing with confidence, self-hate, lost their job, just need a good word. Can you give something to the people? Because I feel like you're great doing that. I could just scroll and I'll hit you and I'm like, he's on time. Like, did you call God and say like that I needed this? And I feel like that has been your gift. Like, people can just, we know you through the internet and through our phones, but you talk to us and hit us in a personal way.
Well, you know, what I'll tell you is this, is that I've been through a lot of hard times. And I bring that up, not to make this about me, but to let you know that I understand what it means to go through a hard time. I understand what it means to have a lot of bills due and ask, and how am I going to pay this? You know, I understand what it means to have a broken heart after you gave them your full heart and your full being, and you're sitting there left with scraps of your heart and ain't even answering your calls no more. I understand what it means to go through some of the most difficult moments with the people that are closest to you. You know, I get it. But what I can tell you is this, is that whatever's happening today is not a reflection of what will happen tomorrow, unless you don't choose to do something different today. If you don't like what you're going through right now, then focusing in on what you don't like is not going to change it. What's going to change your situation is focusing on what can I do to change my circumstance, okay? I'm overwhelmed, MJ. You know, this bill, I'm lonely, I'm this, that, and the other. Okay, I get it. What is one step you can take today, that can help move you one step closer to being able to address the top thing that's hurting you today? If you can take at least one step a day, you say, MJ, I want to find a man, but I feel like people don't look at me, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, maybe one step to take today is to go and ask yourself, am I the full embodiment of how, and do I feel most attractive to myself? No, you don't? Okay, then what can you do about that? Well, you know, I feel like I need to take care of my body more. Okay, so maybe the step today is to do a refrigeration cleanse, to go through your refrigerator and take out some things that you don't think should be in there. Oh, MJ, my finances are a mess. Okay, well, maybe the first step you can take today is to look over your spending to find what is one bill that you can reduce or eliminate. What I'm telling you is this, is that we change our life one step at a time. We don't change it by focusing on the things that we don't like. We focus on the things that we want to change, that we focus on where we want to go, and that's what changed our life. So if you're in a tough moment right now, understand that this can just be a moment if you're willing to take steps now. And one of the things I tell my nephew's sons is this, is I say, process your progression now and then feel your feelings later. Now, I know some therapists may disagree, like, oh no, we have to process our feelings now. Oh, shut up, okay? No, get through it now, okay? Figure out what you need to do now to get through it, right? And then once you get through it, then you process those feelings. Because sometimes the feeling's too heavy in the moment. So what can I do to get through this right now? Let's fix it, and then we'll deal with the feelings afterwards. And so that's what I would recommend to you. Let's get through this, and then we can deal with the feelings later.
I love that. Thank you so much. And before I leave, my mother would kill me. She said you had to give her a shout out because she loves you. She loves your nephew. She was like,
what's her name?
Candy. Her name is Candace, but everybody call her Candy. She is in love. She's like, and the nephews, it's the nephews for me. She was like, remember when? And she's telling me, like, as if we walking down memory lane, she's like, one of the nephews wanted to leave and he was having a hard time. I'm like, mommy, please. She was like, can I sit on an interview? I was like, no, because you're going to be like, hi, okay, at the wrong moment. So she.
Well, you tell Miss Candy, I'm going to tell her right now. Hey, Miss Candy, I appreciate you. I love you. And I love that you allow me to come into your heart and into your home through your phone, through your TV, wherever you watch me at. I appreciate you for clicking like and clicking share. And I'm wishing you every good thing and every desire of your heart.
Thank you so much. And people, sister girls, go get the book. It is a game changer. It is out now. Thank you so much, MJ. I appreciate you and congratulations. And that's it. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye.